And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Wednesday, September 24th. Temperatures outside in the 70s after some dense fog this morning. That's burned off. We got plenty of sunshine out there on our way to a high into the upper 70s today. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki along with our Ag Director Bridget Riedel. And Bridget, I don't know how dense the fog was in your area this morning. I heard it was a little lighter just west of the valley. But it was down to about less than a quarter mile here in the FM area. How bad was it in your area this morning?
Not bad right here. But again, I think I have solidly been at my desk since about 6 a.m. So the view from my driveway looks great.
Okay.
You know, there's just days where you don't get out the way you anticipated, and you just have a lot of things to take care of. So yeah, I didn't get to see the fog today.
All right. Okay. Well, and it was dense, and I'm not expecting that to return as we head into tomorrow morning. But we are looking at the warm weather. That's going to continue, it looks like, all the way through the upcoming weekend. We've got sunny skies for the rest of the afternoon. Temps in the upper 70s and then down into the low to mid 50s tonight. South winds blowing just enough to prevent any widespread fog, but we could still see a little patchy fog. And then as we head into Thursday, winds turn to the northwest, about 10 to 15, highs in the mid to upper 70s, and then breezy to windy conditions out of the south on Friday with highs in the low 80s. Homecoming on Saturday looks absolutely beautiful with temps in the mid to upper 70s and a light wind and plenty of sunshine, but that wind picks up out of the south again on Sunday, low 80s, and we are going to round out the month of September next week in the low 80s with pretty breezy conditions out of the south. But what a way to end the month of September. And this weather is brought to you by Progressive Ag Risk Management Specialists. I'll tell you, this is just a great stretch of weather. We've been talking about it before, Bridget, for our ag community with the drier weather, drying out those crops that haven't been harvested. We're not getting out in a wet, muddy field for the most part. It's a win-win as we start out the month of October.
Our folks out in Devil's Lake, North Dakota, are actually thinking they're going to be back in to soil sample, if not later today, tomorrow morning, because we did get some heavy rainfall up in that region. So glad to be doing that, as well as, again, with harvest, folks are getting things done. I just saw some messages here from southern Minnesota. We are seeing some harvest rolling there. Folks are taking off slightly higher moisture corn. They want to use that as feed, so probably switching over to soybeans fairly soon. And beans have been turning quickly. As with the discussions just right around where I live in northwestern Cass County, we have heard a number of folks that have started to, you know, just slowly get into those bean fields. Some of those early maturing varieties were ready to go, and they're getting those off in good time. So I also want to make sure that we say thank you, because in our rural communities, we have so many folks that spend their extra time as first responders. Well, we had a recent contest where we wanted to give away the chance for a backstage meet and greet with Lee Bryce. That'll be happening September 27th during that concert at Shields Arena. And our winner is with Fargo PD. But I don't want to overlook, again, all those folks who are our rural deputies, our first aid responders with ambulances, with fire departments, etc. And our winner for this contest is Joshua Persons. He was nominated by his wife, Jessica. And she said he has made many sacrifices, missing holidays, birthdays, family events to serve and protect the community. And he's been there during darkest moments, whether it's a mental health crisis, saving lives from overdoses, protecting children in danger, and so much more. So thank you to everyone who serves in those capacities. We greatly appreciate it.
Well, and great for Josh. You know, it's nice to see our first responders acknowledged and honored like that. And Josh, hope you and your wife have a great time at the concert. Sounds like a good time for sure.
That would be excellent. Yeah, I think they'll have a great time at that concert this weekend.
And I guess his birthday is the next day following. So that's a nice birthday present on top of it.
Even better.
Right?
What a great way for us to acknowledge that for them. Hey, you know what? They're going to be over at the Shields Arena, which is close to Veterans Boulevard. Maybe they're going to stop by the Coral Laundromat, because we are live to you from the Coral Laundromat studios. So you've got some things you want to take to the laundromat, whether you want to drop those off or do them yourself, you certainly can. It's 3620 Veterans Boulevard. And I just want to point out that they have great big commercial washers, which will take care of all sorts of problems you may have, including horse blankets. It's not very often someone willingly says, sure, bring your horse blanket over. Let's wash that. But we do.
Good deal. We're gonna do weather trivia on the last segment here today, Bridget. But it's a more difficult one. So you can have your Google fingers ready, but you're gonna have to be quick with it. So
no, he's lying. No Googling. That's cheating.
Well, come on. We all know everybody's gonna be Googling trying to find the answer. So although,
come on, we're smarter than that, people. Right?
Well, I'd like to think so.
We'll look at our phones judgingly, but you won't be able to see it.
Yeah, right.
That's again, fair.
Yeah, and you'll want to stay tuned for that last segment. Well, you'll want to stay tuned for the whole show, but that last segment, again, this is for one of our heavy-duty Darter plastic rain gauges. And the only thing we ask is that when you win, that you report your rainfall totals to us. You can email us at weather@flagfamily.com or ag@flagfamily.com. Let us know, and then we pass those details along to the National Weather Service, and they archive that. It helps a lot, especially if the winners are outside of the FM area, maybe. You know, in some of the rural areas where we don't have like an end on site to measure the rainfall, or even just around the FM area, too. You know, we got two reporting stations here, is the airport and the end on site. So that's all we got in the general area. So the more rain gauges we get out there, the better information we can get to the National Weather Service.
Excellent. You know, have you ever driven down the road and wondered, what does it take for the size of those tractors to be pulling those types of tillage implements, et cetera? And maybe this hasn't occurred to you to put a dollars and cents figure to it, but it's the truth. When you consider the cost of machinery these days, you have to put that dollar amount on your, you know, per acre cost so you could accurately figure out, are you profitable or not? All right, here's something to consider. If you have a 640 horsepower tractor, your engine hour cost on that new tractor, $350 per hour. Now, what's being taken into account for that $350 an hour? You are looking at things like list price, labor and fuel cost, overhead, that includes your asset depreciation, insurance, interest and repair costs as well. Now, maybe you don't want to spend quite that much and you want it to drop down. Well, if you went to 590 horsepower on that same tractor, would cost you $327 per hour. So really, to get your hourly tractor spend to a more reasonable level, like under the $200 mark, you need to go down to a 240 horsepower tractor. Now, all of this information has come out in the University of Illinois Farm Business Management report called Machinery Cost Estimate, and it's based on tractors. So if you're curious where your tractor falls, or if you are interested in using that information for better profit and loss statements per acre, maybe you want to take that into consideration. So again, if you're looking for it, University of Illinois Farm Business Management Machinery Cost Estimate, one of those things you could consider. Today, we are going to be joined by a different tractor expert. We're going to be joined by BJ Christopher. He's with MMS Exporters. Now, I haven't had a chance to meet BJ in person, but in talking with someone that he works with, we talked about the fact of what does it take to get tractors and other implements shipped overseas. When someone buys here in the States, what does it take to get them over there? Well, I think we'll have some very curious question and answer with him about it, because I think it's more than you might anticipate. And some of the questions that those overseas buyers ask are ones that we probably wouldn't even be considering. So I'm looking forward to visiting with him. Don't forget that during today's conversation, you can call us on the JLA Insurance phone line, 701-293-9000. You can always send emails, just as Dean said earlier, weather@flagfamily.com. And we're happy to have you watching us on our live streams, Facebook and YouTube, WDAY, Weather and Ag in Focus, and Acres TV. So stick with us. We'll be back after the American Ag Network Livestock Report, and we'll visit with our guest, BJ Christopher, MMS Exporters. Well, now, are you thinking about your tech support? Maybe you should be. This is a great opportunity to take some time and visit with Chris Sherman at Tech Support Farm, making sure that you aren't going to get hacked. And if you do, that you have some backup support to help prevent fraudulent land deals, schemes with machinery, and so much more. Get that chance to talk to Chris Sherman. You can find him at techsupport.com, techsupportfarm.com, and he'd be happy to help you out. I have had several guests send me messages, several listeners send me messages about our upcoming guest, and they will probably be taking advantage of the JLA Insurance phone line, 701-293-9000, to be asking questions. Our guest is from Hankinson, North Dakota. It is BJ Christopher with MMS Exporters. All right, so BJ, how does a guy in North Dakota start exporting tractors and equipment all around the world?
Well, I don't know if I have enough time to explain all that, but I grew up west of Hillsboro on a farm out there growing. My dad grew potatoes and then sugar beets. And through a series of circumstances and unintended things that over the next 20 years, we ended up in the exporting business. But it all started with, like I said, we were out in the farm there, and I grew up running the sugar beet harvester when I was young, and I'll try and keep it brief. I know we don't have all day here, but
you're okay. You're
fine.
14 or 15 years old, I was running the beet harvester, and because I didn't have a driver's license to run the truck into town, so my dad and my uncle were running the trucks, and I was running the beet harvester and working, you know, all night. And then back in those days, you know, after 10 o'clock, the radio stations could crank their power up, and
right.
Had an old tractor out there with a cab. That's all it was, a little bit of heat, 1066 International. I'd shut it down when the trucks were gone, and I'd turn the little AM radio on up in the corner that I'd modified, and I'd listen to those stations all across the country, skipping off the stratosphere and Texas and, you know, Dallas and
Chicago,
absolutely Chicago. And,
oh, yeah.
And so I'd think about those places, and I was just a young kid off the country, naive young farm boy that was wondering if I'd ever see those places. And like they say, the saying is, if you want to see God laugh, you know, tell him your plans. And I just figured I'd be on the farm the rest of my life, and he had some other plans for me. And so, like I said, fast forward about 20 years, and I'm standing in Red Square with my son, you know, at a place that I'd never think I'd even see, you know. That's just one of the examples. But things kind of went, the apple cart turned upside down with our farming operation out there, and we ended up going out to Colorado and got involved with the church out there. I was running a mission trip out to Ukraine at that time, because the Soviet Union had just broken up a few years earlier, and they were shipping humanitarian goods out there. And that's how we got involved in containers. Her son was running kind of an import-export, or mostly export, from Iowa out to Ukraine, and he needed a little help. So for a couple of years, I'd just go help him load containers. And we started meeting dealers that were looking for help to export, and it kind of grew from there. I didn't wake up one day and just say, hey, I'm going to start exporting it. And that was about 25, 26 years ago now. So,
and BJ, what kind of equipment do you export?
Well, we started out doing mostly ag equipment when these countries over there were waking up and starting to advance their ag sector. You know, they all wanted corn, and of course, up here at that time there wasn't a lot of corn, and so we ended up down in that Illinois area. That's where we settled in, because that's where the corn equipment was that we were exporting. It was old stuff, John Deere 1000 cultivators and, you know, 6 and 8 row corn planters and things like that. So mostly ag equipment at that time, but now we do everything. We do ag equipment, construction equipment, boats, trucks, you know, motorcycle, whatever. If you need it shipped, we can handle that.
Okay. So when you say if you need it shipped, we can handle it. So you're not just trying to cram that 1066 in a container to put on a ship to send overseas, correct?
No, we do that. Plus, we do all the paperwork, all the customs clearing, all the USDA documentation, you know, everything you need to go along with that. And over the last 25 years, that's really changed as well. There's a lot of,
I bet,
a lot of extra things that we have to do now. I mean, I look back on how we started, and we'd literally go dumpster diving for wood to stick in these containers to use for dunnage. And we did that for a few years. But then the laws, the maritime laws, all that stuff change. And you know, so we have to have special lumber. We have to, you know, all that stuff has to be you know, approved by the maritime authorities, so to speak. So,
all right. When you said that you need dunnage in there, but you didn't say that you can't get a 1066 in a container. So literally everything's got to be taken apart, broken down, and labeled for reassembly?
Exactly, right. And we, you know, that 1066 right now would be really easy because we do the big combines. The biggest ones we do right now are like the S680s and those combines. We put those in containers, the big round bale cotton pickers down south. We do a lot of those, or not a lot of those. We used to do a lot of those in containers. But we also ship stuff whole, too. They call that row-row or put it on flat racks. And so if you have something that won't fit in a container or if you don't want it taken apart, then we have ways of shipping it overseas and leaving it whole as well.
Who's our biggest exporter to?
Well, it depends on what you're exporting.
Okay.
You know, we started out, like I said, about full-time, really, about 20 years ago. And like I said, we've grown it over the last 20 years. We shipped to about, I think we got our 61st country last week.
Oh, wow.
Some country that we haven't shipped to before. And, of course, they're all varying degrees of volume.
Sure.
We do an awful lot to China, South America. There's a lot there. Mm-hmm. Australia and New Zealand, we used to do a lot to them, but the dollar got a little too strong. So we're affected very much by the dollar and things like that, too.
Oh, man, there's a plethora of questions coming in from listeners, things that I'm writing down that we want to make sure we talk about. And we're going to do that as we continue our discussion with BJ Christopher. He is MMS Exporters, or should I say with or for? Well, I think he's mostly the face of. And we'll continue that conversation after the news. We'll be back. Thank you to some of our Here We Grow sponsors who are a part of Custom Farming 20 Acres of Wheat right here in northwestern Cass County, North Dakota this year. Two of those sponsors would include Red River Retention Authority. Boy, I always got to slow down when I want to say that one, as well as Gowan USA. Gowan USA wants to remind you that you have the opportunity for a burn down herbicide application, and you could go ahead and be using Vita herbicide for that. It's a great compatibility with other items such as glyphosate, 2,4-D, et cetera, for burn down this fall and leaving some residual behind. And then for Red River Retention Authority, coming up on October 8th in Grand Forks, they are hosting Aubrey Bentoncourt, who is the 17th chief of the USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service. And there's a day-long tour looking at conservation, flood retention, and the public is invited. So you can join Red River Retention Authority for that. Our guest in studio today is BJ Christopher. We're talking about exporting farm equipment, where it can go and what can go. So when buyers are calling you from overseas, BJ, what are some of the questions that they ask that probably don't come up when a buyer is looking at something here locally in, say, the five-state region?
We deal just about everything over internet, emails, and things like that. In those 61 countries, we have an awful lot of people we've never seen or met. It's all been in the internet, and so to answer your question, the internet is what changed things. When we first started on this, I used to go out and be an order buyer, so to speak, for these customers, and they'd give me a list of what they wanted. I'd go to auctions, I'd go to dealers, whatever, and find it for them. The internet changed that. Now they can go online and they can find this equipment. They can look at it just as easily as I can, probably easier, and mostly pictures and things like that. And so we don't get faced with a lot of really what we're faced with more is, okay, how do I get it over here? How much is it going to cost? When can I get it done? They've already pretty much made up their mind on what they're getting because they've dealt with the they dealt with the dealer already. And that's changed a lot over the last 20 years.
When I was thinking about some of those questions they might ask, if there are different rules and regulations as far as emission standards, does there have to be different tire sizes or anything like that that would come up that your customers would be asking about before an item ships?
Well, that's a big part of it is knowing where it's going and what the rules are, what the laws are and things like that, and just what people are using. We've learned a lot about that in the different countries we're going to. You know, we have to have the right emissions on these tractors and things like that. We have to know how old a tractor or truck or whatever can be shipped into a certain country. There's restrictions on that because these places don't want our junk, is kind of what they say. So a lot of it can be only 10 years old or newer, things like that. I mean, there's an awful lot of that. I mean, more than we probably have time for right now, but there's a lot of regulations, a lot of laws and things we need to be aware of.
And one person's junk is another man's treasure.
Absolutely.
That's something to remember. Right. Now, BJ, what's changed? What do you think has been the biggest change from when you started this around 20 years ago to today?
Well, I think it's, you know, like I mentioned, the internet played a big role in that, how you can, you know, overseas, the people can just click on online just like we can and check this stuff out and buy it. We don't do a lot of searching anymore like that. We've done a lot of training with dealers on how to approach the foreign customers. We act as the shipping agent or shipping division for a lot of dealerships. And they basically just they make the sale and hand it over to us, and that's what our specialty is. I think the way that the technology and the equipment is evolving overseas has really been amazing to watch and see. The difference between us and them is they haven't had to take the time to develop the equipment to invent it.
Sure.
And so, like I said, we started with the old John Deere 7000s and cycloplanters and things like that, and it didn't take long before they were upgrading to the next better thing, and it continues to do that. Now we're shipping, you know, the new tractors, new combines, all, I mean, not new, but the newer stuff. We specialize mostly in used, mm-hmm. and that's the mm-hmm. difference is overseas there isn't, in the developing countries, they don't have anything, and so they come to the United States because we have the sheer volume of used equipment, whether it be ag or construction or whatever, to choose from.
BJ, I have probably about three or four questions that have come in from listeners as you've been speaking. One of them is, are they primarily looking for pre-DEF equipment, so prior to the diesel emissions fluid that goes in some of the more recent farm equipment or trucks?
Yes, that's true to a point. Excuse me. They don't like technology overseas. That's changing slowly. But they don't want all the bells and whistles that the guys want here. They want gears and levers. It's easy to fix. It's reliable. You don't have to worry about the GPS going down or some fuse blowing and everything stops. In some countries, it's starting to be required, like DEF and some of that stuff. But for the most part, they just want to stay away from it.
Okay. Then, can the dunnage be reused, or does it have to be made from a non-porous material like plastics or metals?
Most of the dunnage we use is it's a heat-treated lumber, wood. There's a very specific regulation on that. And then just a real quick story on that. When we first started doing this, the guys in Ukraine especially, we used to be able to hire local people to come and help unload the container just for the lumber that was in the container. We let them keep that, and that was their payment.
Oh, wow.
And that's how it started. And we did that for quite a while, but then pretty soon they realized that they could demand more, and so that changed too. But.
Okay, another question. There is a, let's call it a story, urban legend out there, that if you put items in a container and you want to pay less money for your container to ship, it goes on the top deck of the ship up higher in the stack. But those are easily susceptible to rolling seas and falling off. So for farm equipment, would you pay more to put that equipment lower in the ship so it doesn't get lost? Does that add to the exporting charges, and is it true?
Not really. It's not, because they don't load the ship according to the price of the container. They load the ship according to where they're going. They have to load the containers in a certain sequence, because they don't offload them all at the same port. And so they know where they're going. Okay. They stage it that way. And so there really isn't a difference in where you put it. And all this time I've been doing this, there have been some sea disasters, but not that many, you know, where you're losing, you know, losing containers in the sea or something like that. It happens, but not often.
I bet not often, and I'd hope not often.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a most popular item that you find yourself exporting?
Yeah, hands down, it's combine heads.
Really?
I'm not sure where all the combines are that they're putting them on, but we just I can't imagine there's any heads left in the country here, as many as we ship out. But we're also shipping combines, and other people are as well. But
are you shipping all crops, corn heads, reels?
Mostly flex heads and draper heads.
Flex heads.
Some corn heads and things like that. But the volume is mostly, over the years, it's always been just your flex auger type, flex heads. That's over the years, that's by far the thing we've shipped the most of.
As you mentioned construction equipment, do you see that your export business is still mostly agricultural, or has the construction business crept up on that? Is there a bit of a balance between the two?
I would say it's still pretty predominantly ag. That's really what we specialize in. That's where we have our most contacts. Construction is growing as we gain contacts and things like that with that as well. But I'd say it's still predominantly ag.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then one more here for sure from a listener. How do you get the machinery in a container? Because
you back up and you drive really fast.
They're open station.
They're all open station when they get there. Yeah. No, it's all just, you take it all apart. I mean, a combine, a tractor, whatever it is, it's just a bunch of parts that if you know how to put it back together, you have a combine again on the other end. And so just meticulous disassembly and marking and a lot of pictures. So
Who puts it together on the back end? Does the buyer put it together, or do they have somebody put it together for them?
There again, when we started, we spent a lot of time overseas. My son and I, we'd go overseas, and just a quick point on that, we had to start limiting on where we go by. We don't send anyone to a country where you need armed guards to take you around, and that's serious. I mean, we had some places that got pretty nasty, so we made some adjustments there, but. But we would go and show them how to put it together. In some cases, show them how to operate it, that kind of thing. But that's changed because now overseas, in the last 10 or 15 years especially, there's been a lot of dealers that have established themselves. And so we do a lot of trade with the dealers overseas that are bringing in this used equipment, reselling it. So they have people that do it. So we don't go overseas much anymore at all to do that kind of stuff because they learn pretty quickly.
Okay. Another question just came in. Do you ship only to the direct buyer, or do you ship to other shippers? And on the flip side, before it leaves the States, are you buying direct from farmers to be exporting?
We do a lot straight from the farm. Well, we call ourselves kind of a matchmaker. Our business isn't buying and selling. Our business is logistics and shipping. But a lot of times we'll get a customer that'll email us and say, I'm trying to find this particular item. Can you help me find it? And so a lot of that we find, I mean, even overseas, they're finding stuff on Facebook now. That's all changed. But we'll do a little bit of that. We're busy enough shipping that we don't have a whole lot of time, to go out and find stuff. But straight from the farmers, we send, like I said, we'll go direct to the farmers overseas, or we'll send it to resellers overseas. We do a lot of domestic moves too, it doesn't have to go overseas. There's a lot of stuff going on within the States, a containerized product or trucks that are what we call our domestic moves that we into Canada, out of Canada, back and forth. Because now with the tariffs. With all that stuff, we actually have a guy that just takes care of pretty much just Canada because getting that stuff in and out, it's a big deal. It's not as easy as it used to be, where you can almost just drive a tractor across the border, even with Canada and stuff, right?
Yeah. Now you've got to worry about steel tariffs and where the steel is smelted, et cetera. So, okay, BJ, mm-hmm. I know that I could have 50 more questions, but we've only got so much time in the day. Thank you for coming in today and talking to us. I have a feeling we may have to talk again.
Well,
we were just talking about that off air.
Right, that's right.
Yeah. We're going to have him back again.
have to get a podcast going here with all that stuff. But
let me know when you want to start that.
Yeah, well, but no, there's a lot to do, and I can I could spend 20 minutes just explaining one question if you let me, but you know, it's been quite a road here the last 20-25 years. It's been, especially for that naive young farm boy that thought he'd never go see, you know, Minneapolis or Chicago. And so
I'm just glad you could tell the stories about the places we've been.
I'm sorry.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
No, I'm glad you could tell all the stories that you have, and I could keep up with the question as I was getting on the back end. So folks should also check out your website. I did go find that for anybody who is wondering, and that is MMSinkExport.com. Mm-hmm. So folks can go find you there.
Right. And I'm sure the phone numbers, all that stuff are on there so they can get a hold of us, and we can take care of it for them.
Good deal. Good deal. Well, BJ, thanks for coming out and talking to us today. We appreciate it.
Been a pleasure.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. And we'll have to have you back for more questioning.
Absolutely.
No doubt.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, don't go anywhere. When we come back, we'll have our weather trivia for your chance to win one of our Darter plastic rain gauges. And Bridget will have a couple of ag topics to go over as well. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus, 1:54 in the afternoon, and it's time for our Wednesday weather trivia. This is a two-part question, so you're going to have to get both of these right. Okay, so the first part is, what is the closest star to the Earth? That's first part of the question. And in what month is the Earth closest to our nearest star? 701-293-9000. What is the closest star to the Earth? And in what month is the Earth closest to our closest star?
Do you know how competitive I am and how hard it is to not shout out answers? But no, I'm going to hold it in and wait for people to call the JLA Insurance phone line. 701-293-9000. Hurry before I accidentally give it away.
Now, I threw this out to a few people at work, and they had the first part correct, but the second part they did not. So, all right, we got a caller on line one. Caller, what's your name?
Hi, my name is Darren.
Darren, all right. What is the closest star to the Earth?
Well, that would be the sun.
All right. And what month are we closest to the sun?
Now, is this a trick question?
Maybe.
It's in December.
Oh, no. Close. You get, oh, man. Darren, sorry. All right, we got caller on line two. Caller, what's your name?
Tom.
Tom, all right. So, the closest star to the Earth, if you were listening, we got that part, which is?
Yeah. The sun.
Okay, and what month are we closest to the sun?
I'd say June.
No, see, that's what everybody at work thought the same thing. Yep. Nice try, though. All right, we're going to go back. Caller on line one again. Caller, what's your name?
Aaron.
Darren?
Aaron.
Aaron.
A-A-R-O-N.
All right, Aaron. All right, what's your guess?
It would be the sun.
Okay.
And January.
It is. It is January. So a lot of people will ask, well, then why are we're closest to the sun in the middle of winter? It all has to do with the tilt of the Earth. So we're tilted away in the northern hemisphere, but in the southern hemisphere, they're tilted toward the sun. So, Aaron, congratulations. Let's put you on hold here. And our producer, our wonderful, talented producer, Addison, will get all your information. You know where the station is at?
Yeah.
Okay. And then he'll get your information. Swing by anytime between normal business hours to pick up your rain gauge.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Aaron. So, Bridget, did you have that one?
I did.
Okay.
Because if you saw my hand gestures here in the background, I was like, okay, that's when it tilts on its axis is different than when it rotates closest to it.
Right.
So my high school science teacher, Mr. Mulaski, would be so proud of me to get that part right because he had zero faith in my ability to ever get anything right in science class.
See, I asked a couple of people at work here, and they're like, well, it's the sun. I'm like, yeah, so when are we closest to it? Well, in June. I'm like, no, and that's not it. Nope. And the difference is only 3% between when we're furthest away and closest, but that 3% is 3 million miles. So it does make a little...
That 3% is the difference between SPF 30 and SPF 50.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. Well, we want to thank everybody for joining us today on Weather and Ag in Focus, the number one show now rated number one in the universe, the Jay Thomas Show. Don't go anywhere. That's coming up next.